Hey, thanks, Canes. 807 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along. Phone number, text line 343-0106, although it seems like people are communicating more right now on our Facebook page as we put up the picture of our winning ticket. We thought about it this morning and said probably we should keep this on the down low. And then Dalton, you know, who is the better one around here, said, no, we need to post this up for everybody to see where we won the Mega Millions last night.
Yeah, pretty, I mean, I might have jumped the gun. We could have waited until we had security around the studio, but I thought, why not?
Yeah,
why not
go ahead and put it out there? And if you don't believe us, I get it. So you would look at the ticket. We have posted the ticket with the winning numbers up on our Facebook page and then asked suggestions here on what we would do with the winnings here. Our buddy Ben suggested a new waterfront radio station or a studio. That would be nice with a 100-foot long mobile command center. So even bigger than what we have now.
And it'll float, I would imagine.
Hey, Bill Finch, if you're listening this morning, Jared said give Bill Finch gas money so he ain't riding his bicycle to work. And Tom suggests we get Photoshop Premium with our newfound winnings.
So I don't know what he's implying there.
You can check the picture out, front page of our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5, and also on our Instagram page.
So who's buying breakfast?
I guess we are. Yeah, so we are.
We'll take turns.
All right, yeah, something like that. I mean, breakfast ain't nothing to players like us. All right, and it is a Wednesday. That means our buddy Jeff Poor is standing by and probably going, God, get these people. Jeff Poor, along with Breitbart, Lanyap, and, of course, Yellowhammer News. What's up, man?
Hey, happy day after not winning the lottery day.
That's right. That's right. So you're in
yourself.
Did you? Yeah. I mean, for us, it's nothing but gravy. But yeah, there's for everybody else today, other than the person in South Carolina that had the other number, you know, the full string, and then what, a couple in Florida and four or five in California. The rest of us got to get back to work. So that's what we have to do today. Let's look at this. All right. A couple things here I want to get into. I guess we'll go national first, and then I want to bring it back to the state because I did have, of course, we had the story this morning that Doug Jones, Kelly had in headlines, that Doug Jones told us maybe Alabama needs to get the lottery. The hottest take from a set. Hot take. Thank you, Doug. But yeah, let's get to this. Less than 2 weeks ago to Election Day, and the Kavanaugh effect is something we've been talking about for a couple weeks with you. First of all, what is the Kavanaugh effect, and why do you think it's waning?
So the idea of the Kavanaugh effect is, you know, people saw the way Brett Kavanaugh was treated during his confirmation hearings, primarily Republicans, and that they were just, you know, very dissatisfied with the way Congress handled it, with the way some members of Congress or members of the Senate handled themselves and some of the things the media did. Therefore, now they're more motivated to vote than they were previously, and that was giving Republicans in a lot of places a bump. And I think it also put a few races out of reach for Democrats. There's a few races. Minnesota, there was a couple of races where they completely pulled out after the Kavanaugh hearings. But I think things are coming back down to earth as Kavanaugh's not quite as fresh on everyone's minds as it was at, you know, right afterwards. And I think some of the polling is starting to reflect that a little bit. But there's always something else to come in and fill that void.
Yeah, okay, and that is the caravan. But I want you to discuss the caravan as a motivator for GOP voters, but then I want to circle back to Kavanaugh, too. I think different things motivate different Republicans. But, yeah, let's talk about this caravan issue.
Yeah, so what? We got a caravan. It's like 1,000 miles from the Texas-Mexico border, but it's getting a lot of press. It's getting a lot of publicity because we've seen this play before where a band of migrants starts somewhere in Central America, and as it makes its way to the United States border, it picks up steam, and then right before it gets to the border, it kind of disperses and, you know, finds all the different places along the border to come in, and people kind of, you know, if you're a Democrat or on the left and it tends to be more pro-immigration, you highlight the plight of the people and you want to make the United States seem like it's more inclusive and welcoming of these poor people. And if you're a Republican, you could play it the other way and make it seem like, you know, it's an invasion, it's a exploitation of our porous border or whatever you want to do. And I think there's a little bit of that going on both sides.
And with this, I mean, the caravan plays into what plank? I mean, it plays into build the wall, right?
Yeah, I think for Republicans, and I, you know, as we go forward here, and Trump's got just a bunch of these rallies he's going to be doing from between now and Election Day. I think that becomes the rallying cry, you know, quote unquote, build the wall, build the wall, build the wall. We'll see more of that just because of this, the way this is kind of in the news cycle right now.
Okay, so what I said, I wanted to circle around. So there was, I think, a Wall Street Journal story came out yesterday that was talking about now the Republican Party is President Trump's. In other words, time has gone on enough at this point that the battle for control of the Republican Party has gone to President Trump, meaning other than a few vocal never-Trumpers still out there, you have a combination of either people that have gone silent or you have people that were, you know, maybe Trumpers or maybe not Trumpers that said, you know what, this Kavanaugh thing really solidified them in saying, hey, the other option other than Trump would not be good. I mean, they were, you know, they quietly were satisfied with what happened for Supreme Court nominations, and therefore they said, you know what, we're going to back this guy. I mean, there has been a, I think, a wresting of control, if there was any control, for the old guard of the Republicans that has truly happened over the last few months, and especially, I think, culminating in the Kavanaugh hearings, where Donald Trump now has, you know, pretty good lockstep control of the Republicans out there.
Well, what it seems like to me is it kind of demonstrates the power of the Republican Party when it's unified. So when you have Mitch McConnell and all his money and all the, you know, all the sort of cronyism and all the power that he wields as Senate Majority Leader, and you unite it with the base grassroots Trump supporters and the Tea Party guys and even the, you know, the former like flank of the Republican Party with the never Trumpers, or at least most of them, the ones that don't have jobs with MSNBC still kind of are out there. But I think it kind of shows once all these forces unite that you really have a formidable kind of political powerhouse there. Now, you know, keeping that together through the elections, easier said than done, and that's going to be the challenge for the Republican Party, I think, going forward. But when it does happen, when all those planets are aligned, when everything is just right, then it becomes really, really tough for Democrats to oppose.
But that doesn't come around very often, right? I mean, the groupthink and the lockstep for the Republicans has been a hard thing for them to get control of.
Well, I think it comes around when it's more easily obtained, that is, when the Republicans aren't in power. That's why you saw 2010 such a wave election that, you know, like we were, I think I was going on the air with you back then, you actually had this unity then, and you had a much bigger wave election that year, that midterm cycle, than you had, and were anticipated to have next month. And I think, you know, you could compare 2010 and 2018, and you're sitting here today. Yeah, the Republicans didn't win the Senate in 2010, but the idea was that they nominated a few bad candidates. They nominated a Christine O'Donnell, the Sharon Angle,
yep.
Some of these candidates that people didn't think could win. But we did see a much stronger showing in the House elections.
All right. Speaking of the House, you still feel, though, with all that being said, you still feel that the odds are, if you're calling Vegas and putting money on this, that the Democrats still take the House.
Yeah, and I mean, I know there's some other metrics out there, like the Nate Silver model on Drudge this morning. It has something to do with like a national poll and funding and all these things, but I don't think it's quite up there at 80%. I think it's probably a little lower than that, that it's still leaning Democrat. There's a lot of these districts where it's just going to be about turnout, and you have to really wonder, can Republicans get the vote out in Wisconsin like they could in 2016? And that's, you know, that's very questionable at this point in time. So what, you know, but what I think the reason I don't think it's a foregone conclusion as many of the pundits say, just because when they do look at these national ballots don't really differentiate where Democrats are just very, 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 very intensely strong. In the bigger cities where there's more people, you gotta look at it. You gotta take that 10,000-foot approach and look at it. You know, every different congressional district and every local race is different. Sure, if we had a generic ballot and we just did a popular vote kind of election, I think Trump goes down in a big way. But you know, that's not the system we're dealing with, and that's where you really are, you know, these national ballots, these generic ballots, national generic ballots do the public a disservice.
You know, talking about Nate Silver and 538, I mean, he was, if I remember correctly, pretty darn wrong in 2016.
Yeah, and you know, people tend to, what I think what happened in that election is Pennsylvania, Michigan specifically, is they may have miscounted or anticipated the level of the minority vote, the African-American vote. I think they expected more vote to come out in Detroit, more vote to come out in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and it just wasn't there on election day. And you wonder, you know, have they got that sample right? Have they discounted for that? Now, conversely, in Florida, they undercounted the minority vote when Andrew Gillum won the primary last month. I think they didn't expect that much of a vote to come out for him, and I think he was expected to finish third or fourth. He wound up winning the primary, and now here we are. You know, you have an Andrew Gillum versus Ron DeSantis, but I wonder if now some of the polling you see coming out of Florida is overcompensating. The problem with the pollsters, and this has been the case the last few election cycles, is they really haven't gotten the sample just right, and they haven't really figured out what the mood of the people are, because I think every election is different, and they tend to try to rely on historic, you know, data, but that's not always the most accurate.
Coming right back, more with Jeff Poore right here on Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings, Wednesday style, means we get to talk to our buddy Jeff Poore. Jeff with Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News. And taking a tour through Election Day, just less than 2 weeks away now. And also that means something for the national scene, as it does also locally. Jeff, as we talk about the upcoming elections here in Alabama, I guess we can start off at the top of the stack and talk gubernatorial here. And it's, I guess, last week and maybe some this week, it's been the Walt Maddox. I'm not saying you're old. I'm not saying you're unhealthy. I'm really worried about cover-up. I'm not. Did I say old? Did I? That's been the tact.
Yeah, so, and then that's where I think we're at that stage of the race where it just feels like, to me, they had this. They didn't necessarily think this was going to win them the election, but they had this opposition research, and they need to play that card, and they farm it out to Bill Britt of Alabama Political Reporter. I think it's pretty telling you didn't see a Montgomery Advertiser or AOL.com or something wrong with it. Now that being said, we may yet see something come on one of these outlets as an October surprise, but I think at least the stuff that's come this far, it's starting out there, and I think that tells you what you need to know about where it comes from. But I don't know that it really matters. That it just seems like it's just kind of going through the motions that, yeah, we're going to use this thing about Kayabe's health. And, you know, does that change anybody's mind? I don't think so. I think people were going to vote for Kayabe one way, or they weren't going to vote for Kayabe another way. But this doesn't change that. And then obviously the thing with the emails, it is a little ironic that Walt Maddox is hitting Kayabe in the same way that Hillary Clinton's opponents hit her on emails and health.
You know, I do. There should be no question why this man writes for the national publications that he does. Just a sentence here. I'm going to quote you from your email you sent us here. I love this. Even the obligatory October surprises aimed at Ivy feel like formalities. I mean, that is just what great writing. That's where we are. But they're still going to go through with it. Is anybody going to go? You know, I talked to our buddy Todd Stacey the other day. Did he think anybody would go Scott Dawson? And I don't know, where's her husband? You know, that whole thing.
Yeah, and I'm hearing that's coming. Here we are,
yawn.
Like less than 2 weeks away. Well, it'll get picked up by the news, and we'll have the discussion over again about the appropriateness of it. You know, how that comes out will be interesting. Aside from them, like, bringing out somebody that claims to be K. Ivy's lover, I don't know how that could manifest itself. But that's that. You know, if you listen to the rumor mill, that they're going to try to do that at least before Election Day.
Jeff, could you see, you know, the October surprise working the other way at all, or did the Ivy team even bother doing some deep research into the Maddox campaign to try to figure anything out? I just, it would be interesting if she had something on Maddox at this point.
You know, I imagine that they do. Now, I know when I talked to some of her folks back during the primary, they'd spent a lot more time and money and resources on, you know, compiling opposition research on Tommy Battle, the mayor of Huntsville, who was her primary opponent. I can't imagine that they did let Walt Maddox go really scot-free and not do that. But they're probably sitting there looking at a 20-point lead and thinking, well, why, you know, this is the last-minute Hail Mary stuff. Why even bother? Why even jeopardize it? This might mean if we, you know, if we play this card, it could even mean we only win by 19 points instead of 20 points. Who knows? But I, you know, I suspect they have some stuff. You know, there's all these rumors about what was going on in Tuscaloosa and some of the finances of the city of Tuscaloosa. And that's some stuff that I think is out there. But I haven't seen any sign that the Ivy campaign is willing to go in that direction.
All right. So the way I see it here, and I may be wrong, but the tightest of the races we're going to see statewide on the ballot will be one for Supreme Court Chief Justice. And kind of walk me through your take on that. You know, Parker versus Vance here. I told you I saw a good bit of Vance signs in yards that usually have Republican signs in them, you know, here on my way from the station to the House. That's my little test, my little sample area.
Well, yeah, your sample area, I imagine, probably had a lot of Doug Jones signs, too, back during the 17 cycle. That's, you know, he Tom Parker is, for better or for worse, he's kind of he's associated with Judge Roy Moore. But you look around, and I think, like, all these Supreme Court justices came out yesterday endorsing Vance over Parker. Mm-hmm. The problem is, it's just that R next to the name and a D next to the name. I think that Robert Vance will do much better than the other Democrats on the ticket statewide. When I say better, I mean the race will be closer.
Yeah,
I don't know
if
you'll get more votes.
Yeah, I mean, I only know is what people are telling me in my ear, you know, but they said this one's a lot tighter than the other races.
Yeah, and when they say a lot tighter, instead of 20 points, it's 10 points. I mean, I can't see Tom Parker losing to a Democrat. We just have too many people that are going to the polling precinct and vote straight Republican.
This is something we're going to have to, we just have a minute left here, but we'll have to talk about on shows in the future, and you're going to be guest hosting for me a lot coming up, so I know you'll have a chance is after all the dust settles from the midterm election, get ready for session in 2019. You're writing about it. So many people whispering in my ear, this is going to be all the stuff that got kicked down the road from 2018 showing back up in 2019.
Yeah, so all the stuff they wanted to do or not wanted to do, but couldn't do in this 2018 legislative session in Montgomery because they really wanted an easy one with an election coming up. I think it's just going to be a bloody mess when we get into 2019. They're obviously going to make a run at the gas tax. They got to make a run at, I think, the lottery. That seems to be kind of the consensus. I also think Republicans are going to make a run at Medicaid expansion, even though right now they're running against it. What I tell you, listeners, to really, really keep an eye on or an ear out for is what these politicians or these Republican politicians are saying about Medicaid expansion, and I would compare that to what you might hear. You might hear something completely different next spring.
There it is. Jeff, if people want to reach out to you online, how do they do it?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
All right, and very good. And to make sure we compare and contrast, so this time yesterday, it was all the discussion of the markets and the markets tanking yesterday. Dow this morning on the way up as it recouped some of its losses yesterday. Unfortunately, Dow's up. Oil is up too, but the S&P is still down, NASDAQ down as well. Coming right back.
Thanks, Kane. 837 here on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. It's a pretty morning, isn't it?
It sure is. And Oktoberfest still rolling on at McConnell Automotive. Tell me more about these deals.
Well, I mean, one of the coolest things happening in Dalton is this brand new Sierra truck. If you hadn't seen it, man, I'll tell you, the Z71 and AT4 and, of course, the Denali version are here with that multi-purpose tailgate. So what that's created is a sale that we have to have. It's a factory ordered sale that we lose rebates at the end of this month. So what we're doing, Dalton, is giving just giveaway prices. We're almost telling people, come steal a 2018 Sierra because these 2019s are coming in. So it's a perfect chance that I invite everybody listening that's in the truck market. If you're driving a Ford, a Dodge, a Chevy, anything, a Tundra, anything other than a GMC Sierra, you need to come to McConnell and either steal a 2018 with these $12,000-$13,000 discounts or check out the brand new truck. And Dalton, these kind of prices are being given on Yukons, Acadias, Terrains. Literally, we have a $159 payment on a GMC Terrain SUV as an example, but it all ends next Wednesday.
And the website's a great place to check out the inventory as well.
Oh, man, we got the coolest website. So y'all check it out. Just Google McConnellAutomotive.com. It's easy shopping. It'll save you a lot of hassle, a lot of time, a lot of money.
Thanks, Mitch. We appreciate it.
Take care, brother.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive. They're on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
Right. Phone number. Text line 343-0106, 343-0106. A couple things to talk about. I mean, we could, you know, do lottery in the rear view, although we have whatever it is, Powerball. Is that tonight?
Yes, Powerball's tonight. What'd they say? It's around $600 million now,
I'm
the Powerball?
I'm so confused. I've shown myself so many times to not know the terms and
stuff
like that.
How do you even care? You won, overnight.
Right. Yeah, we won, so we're good. You can look at our ticket right there, post it up on our Instagram page and the top of the stack on our Facebook page, and check it out. And tell us what to do with the money. People have been giving us suggestions over there.
Here's what you shouldn't do. Yeah. 24 minutes ago, the Associated Press has posted the following breaking news. Bomb found at home of Hillary and Bill Clinton in New York City suburb.
Wow. We'll watch that story and get the latest on that. Yeah, what is it? Oh, yeah, the story from Floribama. You see that Floribama sold $28,000 worth of Mega Millions tickets in one day.
Not bad.
Okay, so you have that. Obviously, you have some desire for people from Alabama to go to Florida to buy the tickets. I think there's probably majority Alabama place people going there to buy them. Mm-hmm. Of course, Doug Jones telling us that Senator Jones says, people in Alabama want to get lottery. We ought to get into this. Really? I know you hadn't been on the job long, but yeah, we've been talking about that a while.
I have a confession to make.
Okay, what'd you do?
I didn't know Floribama sold tickets.
That's where everyone goes for the lottery.
And liquor.
But for some reason, I just thought that people immediately go to Pensacola. I just didn't even.
Well, yeah, okay. So if you're just talking about strategically, if you're up here in town, it'd be better just to go to Pensacola on I-10. It'd be faster. Right, but if you're in South Baldwin, forget about it and take that ride over the bridge and go get it.
That's always the place where I don't know what the threshold is. Maybe $1 billion.
But it makes it worth your while.
No, I'm talking about the news crews. Whenever the lottery gets to a certain amount,
it's over $500 million. I think they post up there.
They all go to the Floribama. So you can see line out the door and at least five news crews there to get shots.
That's for
sure. I have been enlightened. Thank you, gentlemen. I've only been there once, and wow, that was quite the experience.
Yeah, I've been there a few times. Not for lottery tickets.
I will reserve comment on anything for the Floribama. I do want to add, though, I mentioned I-10. I was thinking about the fatal accident on I-10 that we were talking about earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. Pedestrian hit on I-10. Okay, this is over Alabama-Florida line, about 4 miles away from the line. And it just got us talking about this morning what we've talked about so many times, whether it be on the interstate or it's on a surface street. It seems to me like everything, you only know what goes on at home. It's why I've been pointing out that while we have this opinion of what's happened with our BP money in the rest of the state, go listen to ads that are running in Birmingham and Huntsville. They're talking about the South Alabama money grab for this Wolf Bay Bridge idea, that we're stealing money from Jefferson County and Madison County and all that. So, I mean, once again, you've got to look outside your local world to see perspective. So I feel like we have more people walking down interstates and across roads in the middle of the night, dressed like ninjas, like we were saying earlier. I mean, let alone you're walking down the road. Let's wear everything dark we can.
And headphones.
And let's do that. So I said, well, but Sean, you're probably just focused on home, right? Mm-hmm. That you always think the problem is the worst at home because you don't see the issues in other places. Okay. Story from Patch.com. Alabama ranks 8th highest in the U.S. in pedestrian deaths.
Wow. It sounds about right.
And we don't have, you think about it, we don't have the major metros where you think, you would think there'd be a lot more pedestrian deaths in major metros. And New York, actually, and California both come up on the list. Five states, California, Florida, New York, Texas, and Arizona accounted for 43% of all pedestrian deaths during the first 6 months of 2017. Pedestrians now account for roughly 16% of all motor vehicle deaths. The number was 11% just a few years ago. I would say, you know, you could probably add in headphones, texting. Mm-hmm. I don't know, some of those states where California people weeded up riding down the road. But the key is this, and I've said it here, it is a mixture of people that, from transients, like we have right here, urban outdoorsmen that are here in the area where our studios are at Airport and 65, to people that are working out. I'm working out, I got my workout clothes, but that put... They assume that the vehicle won't hit them.
Mm-hmm. They assume that you care about them.
Right, that person's not going to be either inebriated or high or something, or distracted by doing whatever.
Yep.
It blows my mind. Now, this story is an extreme where this person was walking on I-10 where people were going 80-something miles an hour down I-10. But I see the same thing if you're on Airport Boulevard, you're going through Midtown in the wee hours. You know, for me, it's coming from my house out by South to here. It's more like people working out. But they just walk in the middle of the road. And of course, I see them and I slow down and I give them a distance around and stuff. But this... That's me. It could be so. It is something that leaves me just gobsmacked that people just do this.
I think, and when you combine it, when you talk about the distracted drivers, I saw someone yesterday. Her arms were completely stretched out. Right, her right. She was leaning to the right with her phone because she didn't want to hold her phone, and she was smoking.
Wow!
And juggling
and
at the same time.
And no seatbelt. And no seatbelt with children in the car.
Unbelievable. It's got to be, you know, alcohol a lot of the time that people are walking on, especially when they're, you know, doing that.
The people walking,
I dare you to hit me. The people that are walking along the road, I think, especially overnight, I think a lot of times that has to be alcohol and also the phone. But some people seem to have, you know, you want to have your own long-term interests in mind for most things that you do. But I think some people can't see 5 seconds in the future.
Yeah.
They think, I've got to cross the road. Looks like I can cross the road right now. But just the other day on Cottage Hill, at a part of the road where there's no median, someone crosses the road because it was clear on one side, but then they're stuck there in the middle of the road while traffic is flying past them on both sides. It's like they didn't see themselves in the future once they got to the middle of the road.
What next?
What next? And I think so often people just aren't thinking, period.
Yeah. So how would you classify this? You know, at McGowan Park, you know where the jeweler is on the right-hand side, and then you have Steak and Shake on the left. Okay, there were two children, probably under the age of 9, with signs. They were trying to sell something. And the two dads were across the street at the jeweler. One of the kids dropped the poster. It flew into the street.
I know.
And they ran to go get it. And thank God, the car that was turning into that lane saw the little person.
Mm-hmm.
How do you classify that level of ignorance when it comes to having not one, but two children.
Right. Well, there are so many levels of this, and for so many reasons, but you have more and more distracted driving. At the same time, you have, let's say, distracted pedestrians, whether they be ignorant of it because they're children, or that they are ignorant of it because they're ignorant.
Okay, yeah.
Or, you know, yeah. I mean, it's...
I was so angry. I mean, because you want to... If those two adults want to be on their own planet of stupidity, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
But to subject these children, because a child's being a child, the wind blew, the poster board went...
The kid runs out to get the ball in the street. I mean,
there
it's the
you
old...
Go.
I mean, it's, you know, we... Yeah. You know, you watch that in driver's ed. You watch that video. And Dalton, I mean, you mentioned specifically on I-10, you were coming back from Louisiana. You were in Lafayette over the weekend for a wedding. You're coming back, and you saw how many people walking down I-10?
There were three separate instances where people were walking
I-10.
Alongside the interstate. And one was a man who maybe 20s or 30s with maybe a three-year-old kid walking beside him hand in hand. And he did have the kid on the side that was not the roadside. He was on closer to the road, but still. And I didn't see, only one of those instances did I see a vehicle that they may have been walking to the nearest exit from.
Right, would be the excuse. The car runs out of gas, there's a problem, they have to get to the nearest exit. I understand that.
And when we spoke to Katarina Lukatich this morning about this fatal accident, she said, she had no idea where this person may have been heading because the nearest exit was, what, 10 miles away?
Wilcox Road. It was 10 miles to the Wilcox Road exit.
And that's a long stretch of roadway to get from one exit to the next.
Right. She did not see a car like they were trying to get from a, you know, car that had broken down or something like that. They were just...
But for the person who had the child with him that you saw, Dalton, I mean, you would hope that they would almost walk so far in the grass that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, if there's forest to the side or there's some sort of greenery, because people are so surprised to see something like that, they then become distracted.
Yep.
All right, coming right back. We'll grab some calls and text at 343-0106. All right, 853 FM Talk 106.5 and Bopio Mornings. Thank you to the mail lady and others on the text line saying they're excited about the Fairhope appearance of Midday Mobile. That's cool. Don't get over that way enough, but Midday Mobile live from noon to 2 tomorrow at Fairhope Brewing Company. And our buddy Brian and the whole crew over there, thanks for having us out. We're coming out tomorrow, and we'll hook you up with many FM Talk 106.5 goodies. And conveniently for you, if you're going to be getting a cold, frosty Fairhope Brewing Company beverage, got the new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers with me, so I'll be handing those out. And, of course, giving you a chance and a reminder to get registered in the Ultimate Tailgate Challenge. Remember, we have just a few more weeks now before we draw for that winner. And one of your participating sponsors, locations to drop your name in the box, is there at Fairhope Brewing Company. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. But yeah, Fairhope folks, come out and see me noon to 2 tomorrow at Fairhope Brewing Company on Nichols, just off 98. I want to give you a heads up here. If you've got the holidays staring you in the face, whether it be the fact that the haunted room in your house is full of junk, or you have the haunted attic full of junk, or you have the haunted trampoline swing set playhouse in the backyard, and your youngest child is finishing graduate school. These are all reasons to not be haunted and spooked by this, but to get my buddy Trey and the crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK to come out and get the junk gone. Hey, they can do it at your office. They do it at your house. Do it even if you have a property. You've got to get ready. You're an executor, an executrix of a will, and you got to get a house ready to sell. They get it. They give you also, I love this, an appointment time on an actual day. Not a spectrum of time, not a window. They'll say, hey, it's going to be Thursday. It's going to be 4 o'clock, if that works for everybody. And then they're there. And then they do their work, and then they go. I mean, it's really kind of a cool, it's a heck of a concept.
Does the scary music play while you open the door?
It does a lot of times when somebody, when you see the service tech finally get there for some other place, and you know you're the last one of the day, or they have nothing to do, and they're going to visit, that's not what happens with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Get online, check them out, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or just pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, I just want to read a few texts here, but I want to throw a few stats in from that story I was talking about that ranked Alabama 8th for pedestrian deaths. And this is per capita, y'all. This is, you know, this is, so it's not like, you know, it's insignificant. They also found number of pedestrian fatalities increased 27% from 2007 to 2016. This is nationally. During the same period, all other traffic deaths decreased by 14%.
Huh.
Safer cars, safer technology. Pedestrian deaths as a proportion of total motor vehicle crash deaths increased steadily from 11% in 2007 to 16% in 2016. Pedestrians now account for a larger proportion of traffic fatalities than they have in the past 33 years.
Wow. That's
so we're not
amazing.
Imagining this. This is here are the numbers to back it up. The number of states with pedestrian fatality rates at or above 2 per 100,000 has more than doubled from 7 in 2014 to 15 in 2016. And from 2015 to 2016, pedestrian fatalities in the nation's 10 largest cities increased by, y'all ready, 28%. So these aren't imagined, you know, that you're thinking, yeah, it seems like there's more of it than before. It is. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. Now, somebody had suggested on the text line, Donald did, lack of sidewalks is a contributing factor. Sometimes and sometimes not.
Yeah.
Because you look at some of these, you could argue here, but I've also looked at other cities they worked with, cities that have sidewalks everywhere, and they still had a high number of pedestrian fatalities. And the sidewalk thing, let's go to the interstate thing. There's not going to be a sidewalk on the interstate because you're not supposed to be walking on the stinking interstate.
Wow, look at you dropping knowledge.
No, I mean, you're not supposed to be on there. Right. You're not supposed to have your bicycle on there. You're not supposed to be walking on there.
I think inconvenience is the key. I think for people who want to walk across, let's say, 5-6 lanes of Airport Boulevard.
Yeah, like Frogger.
And, right. It's inconvenient to walk all the way to where the light is and then wait and then push the button yeah. and then wait your turn. It's much more convenient to just do what makes you feel good.
Right, and then this happens. And then we had the whole other thing, which... we saw an instance of the other day again that the little rascal, and I know that's a brand name, but the electric mobility scooters were back out on the road.
Oh, no.
We had a fatality, 2 years ago? And the woman it was really creepy because I had taken pictures and posted up and talked about it on the midday show for a couple weeks before because she was so ubiquitous where I was going. She was down here at the Sonic and down on the service road, and then she was killed. On Azalea. And we've seen it again. It's back. I've seen it a lot around Piccadilly, out at Hillcrest and Airport. I've seen it here near Montlamar and Airport. That's not pedestrians. But those are vehicles that are not supposed to be on the road either. So, I don't know. It's frustrating and saddening when these things happen. Ben says, and Ben, I know what he does. He said, hey, I've worked beside the road most of my life. And one of the things you learn is you can't trust the drivers. You got to keep your head on a swivel and be ready to jump. That's for sure. That's for sure. We'll talk about this more coming up at noon today for Midday Mobile. What show's next? Oh, yeah, Laura Ingram on the way next.
Ooh.
All right. See y'all tomorrow morning, 6.